Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace, and I've got a real special episode for you today. As listeners know, we recently had Robert Venditti on the show, and he's got a new title coming up from DC Comics very soon. He is bringing Hawkman back to your comic stores on a monthly basis. So it was a real treat to have Robert on the show and talk about some of his plans and some of the themes of Hawkman. But what I also thought would be beneficial is if we did a Hawkman spotlight. And the reason for this is just for whatever reason, and we'll get into some of that today, Hawkman, more than any other DC character, DC legacy character, perhaps I should say, seems to have the stigma of continuity being messed up and who is he really? And it's just, for whatever reason, there seems to be kind of a higher barrier of entry for Hawkman than any other DC character. So once again, I have Tim from the Hawk World website joining me to give his expertise on Hawkman. And I also have Doug Zavisha, who wrote the Hawkman Companion for Tomorrow. So if there's a couple guys who know their Hawkman stuff, it's these two gentlemen. So welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Jace.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so let's just jump right in. Let me start with you, Tim. As I mentioned, Hawkman is a Golden Age character, or a legacy character, I should say. So kind of a Golden Age version, a Silver Age version, maybe even a post-crisis version. So let's start with that question. So who is Hawkman as far as it pertains to the Golden Age?
Who is Hawkman? That's you have about 6-7 hours. It probably won't be enough time. But well, first, the Golden Age, you know, it started off pretty simple with Carter Hall, archaeologist, finds Nth Metal, becomes Hawkman, teams up with Shira Saunders, who's Hawk Girl. And, you know, he was chairman of the Justice Society. And, it was pretty clear cut all through the 40s. And then, you know, the Silver Age happened. So it's, for a lot of Hawk fans, it's one of their favorite versions of Hawkman. I enjoy reading the comics. There's a lot in there, you know, when a lot of trivia about, you know, when he first used the mace and when he was given the power to breathe underwater by Poseidon and all these different kind of interesting stories. But so it's, in and of itself, it's a great series to read.
And where do you find Golden Age Hawkman? Are there a lot of reprints of that era? Somebody wanted to track him down.
Well, there's they put out one of the Golden Age Hawkman archives, Volume 1, which goes up to, I believe, issue number 25. And we're still waiting for Volume 2. The Golden Age Hawkman went all the way up to issue number 104. Plus there were, single Hawkman stories inside the Justice Society issues up until about issue number 36. And then from about issue number 36, they started teaming up more and doing more like team activities. But up until then, it was more like just solo stories in the comics. So there's a lot out there. It'd be great if they put all that together in one volume someday, but probably the best place to go to is maybe some sites that offer it, you know, digital issues. Probably Doug knows more about that than I do, where you can find it, but that's where to go.
Yeah, I'm not so sure how much of it's on, to your point, Tim, Hawkman first appeared in Flash Comics and through issue 104 of Flash Comics. Right. And I'm not sure how much of it's actually available on, say, like a Comixology, but that'd be probably where I'd point folks. But to your point, there really isn't anything to go to as a trusted source of the Golden Age stuff. not in a one-stop shop sense, at least.
Well, maybe if this series by Robert Venditti takes off, they'll be more likely to reprint some.
Here's hoping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this, Doug. Do you think that part of the reason longtime Hawkman fans like the Golden Age is because it is, you know, a little more simple? Like, it's all there in one package. You know exactly, you know, it's Carter Hall, used to be an archaeologist. Kind of cut and dry, right, before you start getting too complicated.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. It's, you know, he's a two-fisted action-adventure character who happens to have wings and uses whatever resources are at his disposal. You know, I don't want to necessarily draw an even one-to-one comparison to Indiana Jones, but that wouldn't be an unfair comparison.
Right, and I think especially when you look back at his place in things like Justice Society, it seems kind of obvious to me, and again, I'm certainly no Hawkman expert. I've read probably a few random Golden Age stories here or there, but it seems to me like he was a pretty well-respected hero, and you know, he had that long run in Flash Comics, so obviously he must have been popular, but you know, you point to something like him being the leader of the Justice Society, which was kind of the premier, you know, superhero group at the time. So he must have been relatively popular, I would think.
Yeah, he certainly was. And being in Flash Comics certainly helped that. You know, it gave the readers a chance to approach comics in a collected format or an anthology format and sample their characters, you know, for whatever the price was at the time, 10, 12 cents, which, you know, was probably close to a king's ransom when Hawkman debuted in 1939. But, you know, afterwards, it became a little bit more reasonable until recent times when those cover prices get a little bit higher, right?
Exactly. Let's move on to the Silver Age. Where was Hawkman's first Silver Age appearance?
I presume you were directing that my way.
Yeah,
I don't mean to step over.
Yeah, go ahead, Doug.
But Hawkman's first Silver Age appearance was Brave and the Bold number 34, and that was written by Gardner Fox and drawn by Joe Kubert.
And was it the same character from the Golden Age, or did we start to see some changes?
It was not, and this is where things change. That Hawkman was the Silver Age Hawkman. Silver Age started with Barry Allen's appearance in Showcase. I believe it was number 105, Barry Allen being the Flash. And with the Flash and with Green Lantern, the concepts changed from the Golden Age character quite a bit. And with Hawkman, they left a very similar base in place. But is that me that's causing the fuzz?
Yeah, I think so. But don't worry, it'll get edited out.
Okay. Sorry. With Barry Allen and Hal Jordan as Flash and Green Lantern, they changed the concepts up quite a bit, but left the name in place. With Hawkman, they left the base in place where he was still a guy with wings, but they changed it up and changed his name from Carter Hall to K-Tar Hall. And Shiera, they changed the spelling of Shiera from S-H-I-E-R-A to S-H-A-Y-E-R-A. And she was his bride from the planet Thanagar. And they came to Earth as police of sorts from Thanagar, hoping to locate and arrest a criminal named Beth.
Now, do you feel we Tim and Robert Venditti and I discussed this on the previous podcast. Do you feel like if they had named Hawkman something different, you know, they kind of decided to, you know, change the name so slightly. Whereas when you look at people like Green Lantern, you know, it goes from Alan Scott to Hal Jordan, and even the look is different there. Flash goes from Jay Garrick to Barry Allen. Again, the look is a little different. But some of these other legacy characters, it clearly wasn't the same person. I feel like with Hawkman, they you know, call it a mistake or you know, whatever, lack of foresight. He looked so similar. His costume didn't change, you know, like Green Lantern and Flash did. And they didn't change the name enough to where people could be naturally confused. Do you think that that's a, you know, a mistake or an oversight on the part of DC Comics at the time?
Oh, I definitely do. And the biggest complication with that is the fact that in his civilian guise, he took on the identity of Carter Hall.
No, that's not confusing at all. Tim, would you agree? Do you think that that was a mistake on the part of DC?
You know, I hate saying that anything that Gardner Fox did was a mistake. It seems pretty, clever in a way to kind of change the name to kind of a science fiction kind of like name and everything. But like Doug just said, you know, he looks almost exactly the same. The names really, sound almost exactly the same. So, you know, 70, 80 years down the line, we can see how much confusion it's caused now. So probably, you know, if you could go back, I wish they'd given him at least a different name. Because, the visual of Hawkman is so striking that probably they didn't want to change it that much. But, it's caused a lot of problems. So I wouldn't call it a mistake, but maybe maybe not enough foresight, I guess. Yeah.
Now, this version of Hawkman, how long did he hang around, Tim? Was it up until Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Let's see. He started in 1961, and then he went all the way through up until about 1987. The Crisis on Infinite Earths kind of happened during the whole... right about the same time when the Shadow War and then Hawkman Volume 2 was going on, that kind of caused some problems too. But up until about 1987, he would show up again later. But that's about how the first part. That's how long it lasted. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, I can see where that could cause problems, and this problem isn't limited to Hawkman. And, you know, and again, longtime listeners of the show will know that Crisis on Infinite Earths, you know, the reason they did it was DC felt their continuity had gotten out of control, right? They had this multiverse with all these different versions of characters, and they were trying to simplify. They felt like, hey, maybe if our history and our universe is a little more streamlined, it'll be easier for new readers to catch on, and that will help sales. So that was the idea, right? Let's have this Crisis on Infinite Earths where everything gets kind of a reset button. It's all consolidated down into one Earth, one, there isn't a multiverse anymore. There's just one DC universe. And I don't know if you two gentlemen know this, but Marv Wolfman, who was very much involved in Crisis on Infinite Earths, was a proponent of once Crisis ends, everything restarts with the number one. You know, and you can look at something much more recent, the New 52, which came out of Flashpoint, where DC finally did that. But Marv Wolfman wanted to do it back then. And again, I think it would have been a little less confusing for people, because what happened, what they actually did was they had this crisis. Everything supposedly was going to restart eventually, sort of, kind of. But they didn't restart everybody at the same time. You know, the biggest character that restarted like right on the heels of Crisis on Infinite Earths was Superman. Batman also pretty quick, but Wonder Woman, it was a few months. Hawkman was over a year. So in the meantime, you had some stories that technically were still the old versions of the characters before Crisis ended. So I think that started causing some confusion with the next version of Hawkman. So what was that next version, Doug? What was the next big change?
Well, part of the confusion that overlapped with Hawkman and Crisis is that just before Crisis started, you had the Shadow War of Hawkman, which was commercially very well received. It was a 4-issue limited series written by Tony Isabella and drawn by Richard Howell. And while that was going on, since it was so well received, they spun it into a regular ongoing series that Isabella had long-term plans for that, as I mentioned, overlapped Crisis, and he was given the breadth or the permission, I'm using air quotes there, to stay independent of Crisis. So that said, following Crisis, to your point, with everything getting a restart, that was Hawkworld, written and drawn by Tim Truman with an assist from Al Catena. And I believe Al Catena was doing inks, and I don't have the reference right in front of me as far as colors go, but it was a 3-issue prestige mini, and it went back to Thanagar and really changed the legacy and the concept of Thanagar a great deal, adding depth and history to it and creating a hierarchy, a caste system on Thanagar between the under or above and below, between the alleys or the streets and those who were cast down and those who rose above with the wings. It was a hard-boiled, kind of like a cop drama. Had some, you know, some drug trafficking subplots and some betrayal subplots, and as I mentioned, reintroduced Katar Hall. And the original intent for that was, it was designed to be a prequel of sorts to Brave and the Bold number 34.
So doesn't that, but it was set in current Earth time, right?
Well, the mini series, the prestige format 3-issue mini series, didn't actually get to Earth. So it was set in whatever nebulous time of the time. But when they did come to Earth, yeah, that's kind of when things got a little bit broken.
And then Zero Hour caused even more problems, right? And for listeners who aren't aware, so, you know, I mentioned some of the continuity errors that still, you know, here's Crisis on Infinite Earths, this huge event that crosses over and touches just about every book DC has. And then they, you know, supposedly to clean up their continuity, but because of various things, like I discussed, Hawkman, you know, didn't reboot right away. Wonder Woman didn't reboot right away. So because of some of these errors, again, the continuity, even with one Earth, started getting screwed up. So DC's answer to that is, hey, let's do another miniseries to clean things up. And we'll call it Zero Hour. And so, again, another layer to add to Hawkman. So what were some of the things that Zero Hour added, Tim, that kind of added to the confusion?
Well,
I mean, the Hawk God, right, is the one thing that sticks out in my mind.
Right. Well, we're like, after the miniseries in 89, the second Hawkworld series, with Tim Truman and then John Ostrander came on board, and they were writing. And then about halfway through that, well, they went all the way through that. And then Hawkman Volume 3 started. And from the beginning of Hawkman Volume 3, already it was starting to get a little weird. And then halfway through Hawkman Volume 3, they had the Zero Crisis started, happened. And Katar Hall from the Hawkworld series. And Carter Hall, you know, from the Golden Age, were kind of merged together, like you just said, with Hawk God. And I guess they were trying to clean it up and bring it all into one character to make it, you know, easier to follow and stuff. But it didn't really solve anything. The story really, in my mind, the story really struggled after that. It went on for another couple of years until they finally just ended the series by sending Katar Hall into the Hawk realm or somewhere into limbo. So, and at the time when I read it, I thought it was a pretty neat idea, like this Hawk God, you know, when, you know, he's going to, you know, what kind of new character is this? But it didn't really go anywhere, and I thought it was a wasted opportunity.
Yeah, I feel like personally, I always thought Hawkman was a very interesting character. So I always kind of wonder, like, why do they keep messing with him? Just, I mean, pick an origin and just stick with it. I don't know what it was about Hawkman as a character that every writer coming on would come in and say, oh, let's try to fix it this way. I mean, nobody's doing that with Flash. Nobody's doing that with Green Lantern. Again, I go back to everybody assuming because the names were so close that it's this same guy, right? Golden Age, Silver Age, pre-crisis, post-crisis. I don't know. It got kind of screwed up. Was there another version, Doug, between that Hawk God and the Zero Hour and the relaunch of this Hawkman character with New 52? Was there another? I mean, that's a good 20 years.
Yeah. Between Zero Hour and New 52, what had happened was there was a resurgence in popularity with the Justice Society, the JSA. Jeff Johns had spearheaded that with David Goyer to launch the series, and then James Robinson came along, helped out a little bit. And in there, in the first issue, if I'm recalling correctly, the concept of that new JSA debuted with one of the Silver Age, or not Silver Age, Secret Files and Origins type books, or it was real close to the release of number one. And the debut of Hawk Girl there was actually the grandniece of Shara Saunders, as Tim had mentioned at the start of this recording. And Kendra, the new Hawk Girl, became a ingrained part of the JSA. Now, parallel to that, and outside of the comics, you had a successful Justice League cartoon right around the same time, and forgive me, the chronology is a bit off in my head, which featured Hawk Girl as part of the Justice League, independent of Hawkman whatsoever. So in the JSA, in comics written by Jeff Johns, Hawk Girl was reintroduced, and eventually within that series, they brought Hawkman back, I want to say around issue 24, 25. They made a voyage to Thanagar, met Onimar Sin, who became a big bad recently reused in DC Metal. And through all that, they were able to bring Hawkman back as Carter Hall, a variation or a reincarnation of the Golden Age Carter Hall. And this is where Jeff Johns tried to sort everything out by utilizing the concept of past lives and reincarnation and using that, or actually going back to the Golden Age concept of reincarnation, or that was loosely touched upon in the Golden Age, that Carter and Shara had been Egyptian royalty. And with that, Jeff Johns kept building into that with the fourth volume of Hawkman, which eventually would run into the wonderfulness that happened with 52. But the Hawkman series itself had some ebbs and flows along the way.
Yeah, now, I've heard a lot of really hardcore Hawkman fans talk about the fact that this Jeff Johns, James Robinson version managed to reconcile almost everything between the different versions of Hawkman. And it seemed like, hey, okay, you finally did it. Let's keep going with this as, you know, the official Hawkman, official version of Hawkman that's in the DCU. Would you say that's accurate, Tim?
Yeah, the way he brought him back, I thought was brilliant. He came back from the limbo, wherever he had gone, you know, Hawk Girl, kind of acted like a beacon of some kind on Thanagar, and he came back and because they find a way back to, you know, Thanagar, and then he rejoined the Justice Society, and then, you know, the new Hawkman series started. Some great stories in that volume by, you know, Jeff Johns and Rex Morales. Great art is, if someone ever, you know, asked me where to start with Hawkman, that's where I'd tell them to go. But some parts I really didn't like too much. It was the really heavy on the reincarnation idea. And, you know, he lived many lives, and it just, death became just a really big, like, a theme with Hawkman. He's going to die again, and there'll be a reborn, and then they're going to die again, you know. And after a while, it got kind of old for me. It was just kind of rehashed the same thing again and again. Plus, his relationship with Hawk Girl was completely different now, and they almost had him like a, you know, a stalker in some way.
Yes.
He wanted to be with Shiera, who's, you know, again, this is the most bizarre story in all of Hawkman history, in my opinion, is how, you know, Shiera's spirit was in Kendra. But Kendra didn't know it, and it was just, and she didn't really want anything to do with Carter Hall. And so we're just partners, we're just friends, but then they have a relationship, but they didn't, but then they love each other, but they just friends. They just kind of flip-flop around, and the idea was really good, and I think Jeff Johns probably saved Hawkman with that idea, but then maybe just ran its course, and then... The Brightest Day series started, and that's a whole nother story where they just left us hanging in the limbo, and then New 52 started. So yeah, it got all confusing again. They had another chance to get it right, and then they kind of messed it up.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I would say infamous New 52 version. So you know, again, Flashpoint happens. It's a reset on the DC universe, kind of similar to Crisis, but this time DC does go whole hog and restart everything with a new number one. And the Hawkman title that came out of that was called The Savage Hawkman, and it was written by Tony Daniel with art by Philip Tan. Now, the reason I mention that it's written by Tony Daniel is at this time, Tony is very much known for his penciling and not so much for his writing. And I know Tony's a nice guy. I'm not trying to disparage him or say he did a poor job, but okay, here's a reboot of an entire publishing line, right? And so it's already going to be not just a crowded marketplace as comics are, you know, not quite as bad in 2011, but not only a crowded marketplace, but you've got every title from DC being relaunched with a new number one. So that's 52 titles with a new number one. And I don't know that it's necessarily the time to put an inexperienced writer on a title if you want it to succeed, especially one with a character like Hawkman, to Tim's point, of here's a chance to get it right again. Jeff Johns has a good version out there. Maybe there are a few things that don't work. You know, the whole reincarnation thing maybe goes too far. Maybe his relationship with Hawk Girl needs to be, you know, tweaked a little bit, I'll say. So here's that chance, right? Keep it relatively close, but make the small changes you need to make. And again, I think a more experienced writer is going to have a better chance of doing that. Because, I mean, I have to be honest with you. I remember being at San Diego Comic-Con in 2011, right before the relaunch. Everybody's super excited. Everybody's talking about, you know, this new 52 and all these titles. Many, many, many people willing to buy every single book that's going to be coming out, every single new number one. But that can't last. That's not sustainable, right? And people can't afford to be buying, you know, 52 books from one publisher on a monthly basis. So you've got to really put your best foot forward and ensure that your title is one that people keep picking up, because after three or four issues, they're likely going to drop it if it's not good, right? So in your mind, Doug, what were some of the problems with the Savage Hawkman title as far as the character and the story itself?
Exactly everything you just mentioned. And to your point, the inexperienced writer was probably a pretty bad choice in retrospective, especially given the opportunities that were available and the creators that had a passion for the character. And I don't know if maybe Tony Daniel just had an amazing pitch and that's what sold it. But in Brightest Day, the storyline that was left off had so much potential of, you've got Shara disappearing to a degree, and I'll kind of leave that as nebulous as I can. And you've got Carter vowing to find her, and then you pick up Savage Hawkman and there's no connective tissue whatsoever to that. And I understand they were hoping to make a new break, but just the pitch of that, you could have had Carter on a quest to find his lost love, but instead they were working a little too hard to emphasize the Savage of Hawkman and not everything that had made Hawkman Hawkman. They didn't take the time, in my opinion, to establish the character before giving him problems. And those are problems both of the character and around the character. And they worked a little too hard to try to redefine things in Savage Hawkman, in my opinion. And again, might not have been the best time to do such a thing, but that's what they were doing all across the board with the new 52, was changing things up for the sake of change. And with Savage Hawkman, I mean, they found out pretty quick that it just didn't work. I know it wasn't the first title to run its course, but it certainly found its end sooner than a lot of other ones.
Yeah, within the story itself, within the title itself, I remember reading the first couple issues and just thinking, man, why is this guy? And I guess, like you said, Doug, they're going after that Savage aspect, but the guy just seemed mad all the time, and I didn't understand. Like, what are you so mad about, dude? Like, I know various versions of Hawkman, and sometimes they'll choose that as kind of a – and when I say various versions, I'm talking about usually in the cartoons. They'll play up that aspect that Hawkman's, you know, very much the kind of the straight man, very serious and, you know, always the one to kind of give into the battle fever. And it seemed like for whatever reason, DC decided in the new 52, okay, let's take that aspect of the character. We'll call it the Savage Hawkman, and we'll just play it like that. Very, very one note.
Right.
And so, you know, it didn't do that well sales wise. So I think it was only, I think Tony Daniel only wrote 8 issues, and he did have a co-writer after the first few to kind of try to help him out and boost his sales. But with issue 9, I believe Rob Liefeld took over as the writer. And again, you know, I'm not trying to disparage Rob. His art is very much of a certain era. And you know, there's always that controversy of some people not liking his art, whatever. Forget about that. This is Rob Liefeld, the writer. Again, not a lot of experience, not a proven track record as a writer. When he came on Savage Hawkman, was there a shift at all, Doug, that they tried to, okay, this isn't working, let's like change directions a little bit? Or did it seem like he was trying to continue in that same vein?
Oh, it definitely changed directions at that point. They threw in a crossover with Deathstroke, which prior to this point, back to the Geoff Johns series and the Rags Morales drawn era, they had started to establish some rivalry between Hawkman and Deathstroke, and it even stretches back into Hawkman Volume 3. But Liefeld seized upon that and pitched the two against each other, and even brought in Lobo, if I recall correctly. And I have done my best not to remember all the details of that story, just given everything that's happened in between. And right after that, if I'm remembering my Savage Hawkman run accurately, I think what happened is Rob Liefeld didn't stick around too much longer for the writer. Things changed up again, and we got some investigation into Thanagar once more, which just added to the complexity of the fact that they early on in this series didn't define who Hawkman was as Hawkman, instead choosing to rely on, again, the Savage or, you know, the calamities around him.
Now, Tim, where do we go from here? I know Savage Hawkman was canceled with issue 20, so it had a less than 2 year run. So that would put it sometime in 2013 that it got canceled. We're 5 years out from that. We're about to get a new title from Robert Venditti. But that's 5 years of potential Hawkman stories. Where did he show up next? Has he just been off the board all this time, or what? Where did the story continue, or have we had any nuggets, let's say?
Is that for me?
Yeah, Tim, go ahead.
Well, after Savage Hawkman ended, he was in the new Justice League of America series. It started in 2013, but that only lasted like 14 issues, and then it kind of switched over to Justice League United with like Martian Manhunter and Stargirl and a bunch of characters. But that didn't last very long either. He popped up in the New 52 Futures End series, which I didn't care for very much, to be honest. And then he was just kind of, it disappeared for a bit, and then the rebirth started. And a few months after the rebirth started, they announced a new series with Hawkman and Adam Strange called Out of Time. And I was like, oh, good. Okay, they're going to bring Hawkman back. You know, I had no idea what version or how they're going to bring him back or anything. But then about a month before the series was supposed to start, they changed the name to The Death of Hawkman.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, boy, here we go again. you know, they've only killed him off about 10 times and just, you know, and all in the comics and TV and everything. And I'm like, okay, you know, this is new. And this was the Savage Hawkman, from my understanding, the continue. He was back on Thanagar, and Despero was trying to take over all the nth metal in the end. You know, of course, surprise, Hawkman dies. And the writer was Mark Andraco. Did I say his name right?
Yeah, that's
Andraco.
Right.
Yep. And at the very end of the series, he said, this is not the end, you know, more to come sort of thing. And okay, so what's going to happen? And that was in March of 2017. And then about a month or two later, they announced the Metal series. And then that whole thing started. And to be honest, I have no idea where the Savage Hawkman, Qatar Hall, that version fits in the continuity of Hawkman anywhere. I have no idea. Robin Diddy, you know, we were talking last time, he said he figured out how to tie it all together. And when I first started reading Savage Hawkman, it was about 6 months after The Brightest Day ended.
Right.
And at that point, you know, Shira had kind of, I don't know, vaporized into an air elemental or something, and only Carter Hall was brought back, and we see him like screaming her name, you know, trashing the, you know, St. Rock Museum, angry that, you know, they're having to be apart again. And that's where we were left hanging. And then 6 months later, Savage Hawkman starts, and apparently, I guess it's, you know, Carter Hall, he's out in the forest, you know, fed up with the whole Hawkman thing, and he's, you know, getting ready to burn his wings. And I thought that, oh, they're picking up where they left off in a way. You know, he's fed up with, you know, being, you know, separated from Shiera, and Hawkman has brought him nothing but grief. So he's going to try to get rid of it, move on with his life. But then you read a few more issues and, you know, who is this guy? And what's, you know, I talked about this last time. What's his motivation? What is he doing? And we had no idea who this character was. And to me, that was the number one thing that ruined the whole Savage Hawkman storyline. We didn't know who this guy was. You know, what's he doing, and why is he doing what he's doing? And for me, the biggest mistake of Savage Hawkman was how they treated Shiera Thal. And she showed up for about three or four issues, and then she died trying, you know, saving his life. So she's out of the picture again. And it's just, you know, it's just so disjointed. And then suddenly the metal starts, and now we have Carter Hall again. So I'm really interested in how Rob Venditti is going to tie this all together, because, you know, I've gone over and tried to fit it all in the best I can, but we're still missing some pieces apparently, because I can't fit it all together.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I read that Death of Hawkman series, and I didn't know better, and maybe I don't, that doesn't even seem like the same character, right? I know it's supposed to be that same character that showed up in Savage Hawkman number one. I didn't read any of his appearances in between the end of Savage Hawkman and the Death of Hawkman series. So let me ask you this, Doug. Did when he was in Justice League of America and then Justice League United, did it seem like the same character? Did he act the same way as Savage Hawkman, or were they starting to mellow him out, or did it make sense basically?
Well, Justice League of America started off written or co-written. I forget if it was sole credit or combined credit to Geoff Johns. And in there, he didn't discard the Savage Hawkman events and personality, but he certainly didn't acknowledge it. The Hawkman in there was rough and tumble, but he wasn't just mad. He was mad when needed. But he had an air of mystery about him that wasn't present in Savage Hawkman. The mystery, as it were, in Savage Hawkman just was never addressed. It was never created. It was never given to that character. And in Justice League America, Geoff gave him some of that some mystery to power the anger. When we got into the United part and Hawkman leaves the series pretty early once it becomes United, I want to say around issue 3 or 4 in an apparent death. And so the Death of Hawkman character that shows up is an extension of that Justice League United character, which started to acknowledge some of the history of Savage Hawkman, but not necessarily the characterization that had been in that series.
All right, that makes sense. So yeah, again, much like you two, I'm very curious to see how Robert Venditti, he said he was able to kind of, in his mind and in the story he's trying to tell, reconcile most of the stuff that's happened. Obviously, it'd be impossible to reconcile and acknowledge everything. So yeah, curious to see where it goes from here. Let's talk about Hawkgirl specifically in the new 52 that appeared in the Earth 2 title. So that title is kind of an acknowledgement of, in a way, bringing back an Earth 2 multiverse. And for those not familiar with DC multiverse lore, when DC kind of started inventing the multiverse, it kind of started with Earth 2. This idea that there was another Earth that had different versions of the characters. And when the Silver Age happened and they reinvented some of the characters, Flash and Green Lantern, and then updated some like, you know, Batman and Superman and what have you, they still sometimes wanted to go back and acknowledge the older characters, you know, the Alan Scott Green Lantern and the Jay Garrick Flash. And so what they decided to do is, well, let's say that those characters are on Earth 2. That's like the, you know, the golden age, so to speak, Earth of the DCU. So Earth 2, a New 52 title, was kind of in that same vein. You know, a world where there are different versions. Alan Scott was, again, Green Lantern. Jay Garrick was, again, Flash. But in a more modern telling, it wasn't like these were the predecessors of the characters, the Green Lanterns from the, you know, the regular Earth in New 52, or the, you know, the Barry Allen Flash of the New 52. It was just a different take. And for whatever reason, they decided to have Hawkgirl be an, kind of an important and pivotal character in this Earth 2 title, rather than Hawkman, which I found interesting and really liked the character. So can you give us a little more insight into the Earth 2 title as it pertains to Hawkgirl, Doug?
Sure. The Earth 2 title was essentially the New 52 version of doing a JSA title, free of all continuity and any continuity issues that it might create by being placed in the New 52 universe proper. Hawkgirl there was, again, named Kendra, and you'll pardon me, I dropped off her last name, but she was introduced early on, and her visuals were totally changed from things that had been established before. She was definitely a character of color at that point, and she was given, the wings were part of her being, and she had ties back into Egyptian mythology, and that affected her visual presence. The costume of the Earth 2 Hawkgirl had the Eye of Horus in it, right down to the tail of the Eye of Horus that would come off the bottom of the eye. If you can visualize that, that tail would be tattoos on Kendra's face. The costume was blue and silver, very high metallic sheen. She was a weapons expert, much like the Hawks have been throughout their existence. And throughout Earth 2, she was kind of a mainstay character. Earth 2 was launched by James Robinson and Nicholas Scott. But as the series progressed, as the New 52 began to take its toll on creators, James Robinson left that book pretty early with a lot of plans unfinished. What New 52 had done with Earth 2 was established it as its own existence, and they had used Earth 2 to really get into investigating Apocalypse as sort of a tie between whatever or however many realities the New 52 is going to have. And unfortunately for Earth 2, Apocalypse had taken a pretty strong foothold on the planet and taken out the larger heroes, or the Trinity, as it were, of Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman. So that forced these other heroes to rise in kind of a reverse thought process behind the forming of a team. So it wasn't those three as the spine of the team, but more the impetus of the team that would then bring in characters that had the original namesakes of the legacy heroes. You had Jay Garrick returning as Flash, but this Jay Garrick was a student at Michigan State University. You had Alan Scott, who was a media mogul out of Gotham. And again, you got into other characters like Hawkgirl, and we had an Atom Smasher, and Sandman appeared as well. Earth 52 is a wonderfully independent series during the whole New 52 thing, and Kendra was definitely one of the most intriguing characters of that series.
Yeah, and so they really, other than bringing in the Egyptian aspect, it really was a new version of Hawkgirl, right? So when you look at that, maybe that's what DC should have done with Hawkman in the Silver Age, right?
Well, part of DC's problem, and you'll pardon me if I'm way out of turn or come across even a little bit negative here is they'll have success in other areas, TV or cartoon or movie, and success being relative in those realms. But something like the Justice League cartoon, the Bruce Timm Justice League cartoon that established your Justice League as being Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Martian Manhunter, Flash, Green Lantern as John Stewart, and Hawkgirl, that latched into a larger consciousness where people then, you know, as the Green Lantern movie with Ryan Reynolds came out, they were expecting John Stewart and didn't understand Hal Jordan, although comics fans would latch on to Hal Jordan. With Hawkgirl, you know, you pick up JSA or you pick up the Hawkman series and it wasn't the same Hawkgirl that was on that cartoon. And that's where DC kind of trips itself up, especially when you have a legacy that's as convoluted as the Hawk's legacy, both with Hawkgirl and Hawkman. And for Hawkgirl on Earth 2, it was a chance for this character to be fresh, but familiar, but different enough to be distinct and separate from anything else we'd seen to that point. You know, there was no confusing this Hawkgirl as, oh, that's the same one from Justice League. No, it's just the same name, different place.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. So I think that's sort of brings us up to speed with the different versions of Hawkman. I mean, obviously, as Tim said earlier, if we try to answer the question and go through every version, we'll be here for 7 hours. We just don't have time for that. But now that we kind of have a baseline, if you will, and we've all expressed the desire and interest to see what Robert Venditti does going forward to try to reconcile all these versions. How would you do it, Tim? How would you fix Hawkman? Would you go with one continuity? Would you go with you know, the idea that this is another legacy character and kind of a more of a clean break? In your mind, you know, knowing what you know of Hawkman, how do you fix it?
Well, I can answer, but I'll probably have a different answer tomorrow. I'll be, I flip flop around this all the time, but you know, I was talking, you know, in our conversation with Robin Vitti, you know, he was saying Carter Hall, archaeologist, Indiana Jones type of guy who's going, and his main thing is to discover the truth. And, we find out in the middle series that he's an immortal. We thought his whole story started with Prince Khufu in Egypt. Actually, it goes way farther back than that. And so I think, you know, I'm guessing, but in Venditti's series, we're going to see Hawkman, discover more things about himself. So, you know, just stick with Carter Hall. And stick with, you know, he's archaeologist. His thing is to, discover the truth, find out, you know, what's going on. Kind of like, I don't know, almost like the scout for the Justice League. You know, he finds out what's going on and he lets everybody know about it. You know, I think that's a pretty cool position, to be in. But I don't want them to throw away the whole Thanagar thing either. Cause you know, it's just that whole planet and the whole thing that they made there has fascinating potential. So maybe part of his past is a Thanagarian, and he finds out about that later. I don't know how Vendi is going to tie it all together, but just stick with those basic Carter Hall, archaeologist, immortal, and he's out to discover things and stay with that. And I think fans would latch onto that if they did.
What are your thoughts, Doug? How do you fix Hawkman? How do you fix a problem like Hawkman?
How do you fix a problem like a Hawkman?
That's right.
Tim is definitely onto something there. Carter Hall has to be the base of it. And through Metal, Scott Snyder established that not only is Carter Hall the base of Hawkman, or the base of whatever Hawkman's legacy is, he's also the base of the DC universe to some degree. He's as an immortal, he's been around, he's seen things. So do you play up the immortal aspect, or do you somehow tie the immortal into reincarnation to, you know, to keep it all together? Whatever the case is, or however you do that, that core promise has to remain the same. You have to have the character defined, and there's no reason that a character like Carter Hall can't be DC's version of Indiana Jones and discover all these things. And from what I've seen in the solicits, it looks like that's kind of where Robert Venditti might be going, in that he's going to be investigating other civilizations and things that have impacted the DC universe from those. And taking it a step further, with Snyder's introduction of, I forget if he called it New Thanagar or what the other Thanagar was that essentially became, I mean, it wasn't really a red herring in metal, but it certainly didn't have the promise that it could have. With that, you can still have a Hawk Girl that's recognizable to fans of the Tim Justice League, and you can still have Shara, you know, and that character can still be there without impacting the fact that, no, Carter's always been on Earth, or, you know, Carter is from Earth. He could have still met Shayera, who could be the Thanagarian. He still could have done time as a police officer on Thanagar. And the beauty of it is, Hawk Girl, Hawk Woman, Shayera Thal, Shayera Hall became Hawk Woman within the comics. You still can have Kendra as Hawk Girl and not mess any of it up. So you can still have the best of both worlds.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of walking that tightrope. It's definitely going to be a tightrope for Robert and for any other writers that follow him or that Hawkman's adventures spin out into their books. And the best way to handle that is for them to be strong communicators between each other. They're going to need to broadcast who this character is and give this character strength enough to stand on his own, regardless of if you get a new writer like a, and not disparaging him, but like a Tony Daniel, who comes onto a series with Hawkman, give him the purpose of what Hawkman is. And I'm not saying it necessarily needs to be editorial oversight, but it certainly should be creator concern, you know, to maintain the integrity of the character.
Yeah, I agree. It's why I hope that the Robert Venditti title sells really well, and it really establishes, you know, finally once and for all, kind of a definitive Hawkman, and so that anybody going forward, you know, this is the character. Not to say you can't do different things to it, but you can't go back and change his origin. It you know, it has been finally defined. And for me, when I think, okay, how can this work, I look to one of my favorite shows or favorite franchises of all time, Stargate SG-1. Again, there's some, I don't know if either of you guys are familiar with it, but there are some Egyptian tie-ins and tie-ins to ancient worlds. And but then when you look at the very latest series that came on the Sci-Fi Channel called Stargate Universe, they had something really cool. You know, the characters were out in deep space. They were like lost out in space, millions of years away, light years away from Earth. But they had the ability to communicate through this kind of a touchstone type technology, where they would basically get in touch with someone on Earth, and they would trade consciousness, and they would be back on Earth, but in the body of another person, right? So I guess maybe with the Egyptian tie-ins, it's where my mind went. So if you have Carter Hall in the Robert Venditti version, and he's an archaeologist, maybe he finds something like that device, right, way back when, and ends up going to Thanagar that way, you know, sharing body, sure, or trading places or doing something where he goes. That way you can still have, you know, as Doug said, the best of both worlds. But that's just me, like, in, you know, if I were given the problem, right, that's what I would do. Who knows what Rob will actually do. And as I said, I can't wait to find out. Let's talk about some favorite versions. Let's start with you, Doug. If you had to pick like one era or one period of time with Hawkman, what's your favorite, having pretty much taken it all in over your comic reading career, let's say?
Well, see, That's a loaded question right there, because there are, while there are trip ups and near or real bad misses, there's a lot of very wonderful stories. The story I came into Hawkman Comics with proper was Shadow War of Hawkman. But that said, the Geoff Johns stuff is near and dear to me. Rags Morales had a visual take on Hawkman that defied anything that had gone before while still remaining relevant, and made the character his own. It gave Hawkman a presence on page that, while he always kind of had, just because his wings take up so much space, there was no denying what Rags had done with him. As far as, here's Hawkman, you can't ignore this guy, and if you do, it's not going to leave you feeling so good afterwards.
What about you,
Tim? So I would say the volume four, the Geoff Johns, Rags Morales, James Robinson era, especially the very early issues.
Got it. What about you, Tim? What's your favorite version?
Oh, know? Boy. Another question you got to ask me again tomorrow, but it's a tough one, because I love all the versions. I mean, there's just something about Hawkman that just, I don't know, catches my imagination, and no matter which version it is, you know, I enjoy the stories. I like the setup of volume four that Geoff Johns did, where, you know, he's Carter Hall, he's working in a museum in St. Rock University, you know, part-time university professor, Justice Society member. I really like that setup. But as far as the character himself, when I first discovered Hawkman, that was he was Qatar Hall in the Justice League series back in the mid or late 70s. The Showcase Presents Hawkman that Jack Harris wrote in 1978, where he was not a savage guy, just a really intelligent guy. He used science to solve a lot of his problems, and just the way he used his aerial abilities to fight maybe enemies a bit stronger than him. Just the way he figured out problems, his relationship with Shayera was, I think, you know, one of the strong points about Hawkman. I like the setup of Carter Hall during the 2000s, but as far as a character, I like the Qatar Hall character from the the Silver Bronze Age.
Right, and you mentioned if somebody were to come to you and say, okay, I want to get caught up on Hawkman, I want to familiarize myself with the character before the Venditti title starts, you would point them to that volume four, is that right? Or is there another spot that you think they should start?
I get asked this a lot on Twitter and stuff, and I usually give them about three or four choices. One is what I just said, the Showcase Presents Hawkman, the three-issue series from 1978. It shows a lot of the character. I also really enjoyed The Legend of the Hawkman by Benjamin Robb from 2000. It's another three-issue series, and it's one of the best Hawkman series that's ever been written. It's a lot of people are, strangely enough, surprised to, you know, go look for it after I suggest it, and they all come back, you know, just loving it, you know. So that's one I definitely recommend. And then the Geoff Johns Hawkman Volume 4 from 2001 to about, was it, 2006. Geoff Johns wrote the first 25 issues, and then other writers took on after that. But the World's Finest Comics backup features from about 1978 to 1982. There's there's a few, I don't know, a dozen or so. Am I right, Doug? About a dozen or so backup features.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a couple more than a dozen. But yeah, there's a variety of writers in there. Bob Rosakis and Jack Harris.
But they all, like, you know, Jace just mentioned a while ago, I think they talked with each other because it's pretty consistent of what the character is about and what he does and everything. And from 78 to 82 in those few backup features, those were a lot of fun. So I would usually recommend those as well.
What about you, Doug? Where would you point somebody?
Volume 4 is probably the most accessible. To Tim's point, it's been collected in Omnibus, and they've done complete Jeff Johns collections of Volume 4. Legend of the Hawkman, the Ben Robb story, is without a doubt one of the greatest freestanding Hawkman stories ever. It's phenomenal. It's got art by Michael Lark, and it just hit at the right time. It was crafted to be like a Legends of DC story, but also at the time DC Direct was producing action figures, and they wanted to have a story so that they could put a two-pack of Hawkman and Hawkgirl, or Hawkwoman, out on the shelves, and, you know, kind of a superpowers type origin story for that series. And it just wound up exceeding anything and everything that it could have been. So Jeff Johns stuff, definitely the Legend of the Hawkman. If you can find the Showcase Presents Hawkman, I know Showcase Presents is getting harder and harder to come by, but if you can find those are just amazing. My Hawkman tends to be, I tend to gravitate towards the Silver Age if I'm grabbing something to read. So it is Katara Hall. Shadow War of Hawkman is also one of my favorites. That's where Hawkman really took hold of my imagination. Written by Tony Isabella, drawn by Richard Howell. The art at the time, the coloring was that early 80s oversaturated color, but it worked for the series and for the story.
All right, so that should give you listeners a lot to chew on there, and a lot to track down as far as Hawkman goes. So let's shift gears again. I wanted to, just for the sake of, you know, we've talked about Hawkman with the new series coming out. Now let's talk a little bit about the writer, because I know a lot of Hawkman fans are so hardcore that that's almost all they read, and you may not be familiar with right? I mean, am I wrong in that, Tim? I mean, aren't there just, okay, it's just Hawkman and not anything else?
I don't know. I kind of consider myself a rarity, but you know, I don't know. A lot of the members of their Hawkworld groups, you know, a lot of them are Batman fans or Flash fans or, you know, whatever, but they come over for Hawkman as well. Okay. So I think it's, you know, their interest is varied, which makes it an interesting conversations as well. So.
All right. Well, I wanted
to say,
I wanted to give some Robert Venditti highlights. So if you haven't read any of his work before, if you just read Hawkman, or if you just have, you know, maybe you do just read Batman, maybe you just haven't come across Venditti's work. I know that he's followed a couple of beloved runs on his work at DC, to where, like, let's just take his Green Lantern run, for example. He was the guy that followed Jeff Johns. And I think unless they'd gone with, like, Alan Moore or Grant Morrison or somebody that you know, was a legend in their own right, whoever followed Jeff Johns on Green Lantern was going to be kind of disparaged, let's put it that way, just because Jeff had done so much with the mythos. He added in all the other, you know, cores, the different colors, Blackest Night. You know, it was just such a legendary run that when he left the title, regardless of who was going to follow, there was going to be disappointment, right? Disappointment about John's leaving, and kind of by association, disappointment with the writer that was taking his spot. You know, it's like if you're a fan of a particular sports team and your favorite player gets traded, you know, you're disappointed, and whoever comes in to take their spot, you're just kind of like, oh, this guy, you know? And so I feel like with that and also with Rob following Francis Manapole and Brian Buccioletto on Flash, the new first iteration of the new 52 of Flash that was very well received, that he kind of was starting behind the eight ball on those two titles. You know, he did work on a title called Demon Knights for the new 52 as well, that was a much lesser known title. So I think a lot of people hadn't read that. So, and it didn't have any kind of legacy or history to the title the way Flash and Green Lantern did. So, you know, I heard a lot of people didn't like his Flash run, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but and same thing with Green Lantern. And Rob himself, when we had him on the podcast, said that when he started on Green Lantern, he's like, I really didn't know what I was doing, but I feel like I found my footing. And to me, it's a seminal run on Green Lantern as he approaches issue 50 and gets to put his stamp on the character once and for all and move on to Hawkman. But if you're talking about Robert Venditti and you want to read something really good and kind of understand his sensibility, the first place you have to go is Exo Man of War. He did, again, a very, very long run on the character. He relaunched it in 2012 with the new version of Valiant. And there are some similarities with Arik of Dacia. That's the main character in Exo Man of War. He's a man out of time. He's a man from the ancient world. He's got this incredible technology. And he's, especially when we meet him at first, he's much more of a fight first, ask questions later. You know, not the greatest strategist. He is very much a natural leader. But what's interesting about the run is that you see Arik evolve over time. You see him learn and grow as a character. So it's a great run. The issues aren't terribly expensive. You can pick it up in trade. So that's where I would point first. And it gives me hope that Rob can take this character of Hawkman and incorporate things that have come before, you know, even going to the Savage Hawkman and being kind of one note, that he'll be able to reconcile all that stuff together. So again, if you're curious about Robert Venditti's work before Hawkman comes out, we're getting down to it now. I don't know how much time you have to read comics, but I know my time's always limited with all the books I'm trying to read. So get out there sooner than later and pick up some trades or check out Exo Man of War. I definitely recommend it. Have you read much Exo Man of War, Doug?
I sampled a lot of the early run of it. At the time that Valiant was relaunching, I was writing reviews for comic book resources. And so I did get into Exo Man of War a bit. And from Exo Man of War, and I've got a feeling you might be heading here next, was Armor Hunters.
Right.
Have you? And in one of my reviews of Armor Hunters, I said, this is how you run a universe-wide event without being ridiculous.
Yeah, agree. We'll talk about that in a second. Tim, have you had a chance to check out any Exo Man of War?
Yeah, after they announced, you know, Venditti was taken, and like people kept suggesting, you know, you got to read Exo Manowar. So I went and found it digitally and read through the series, and I enjoyed it. And again, like you just said, I saw a lot of similarities between the main character and Hawkman, and I kind of thought, well, maybe, you know, Venditti could make this is the angle that he's going to try to go, but he told us last time that he's going to do something, you know, completely different. But I kind of knew Venditti's name from the before, and then the Hal Jordan series started. I was reading that online, and I never, you know, thought he would be taking Hawkman. So I went back and I was rereading everything, and he's very good at making you concerned about the character. What was it? Just the last issue. Venditti's writing a series with the Green Lantern and Dark Stars.
Right
now. Yep. And just what was the last issue? There was, a scene there where I was generally concerned that, oh, Hal Jordan's going to buy it here, I don't know. He's just good at writing scenes that really just draw you in and make you want to read more. And since I was reading the series digitally online, I would just, just go from one issue and one just kept reading. And I think I read Exo-Manor War in 2 or 3 days. And I really am excited about seeing what he can, that same quality if he could bring that to Hawkman, I think it would be great. Yeah.
Yeah. And to get back to Armor Hunters for a minute, to Doug's point, the way you do a crossover, right, without going overboard, without telling people, you've got to read every single book from this publisher that comes out. And again, it's telling stories that are interesting, that are compelling, like Tim said, where you care about the characters. And that Armor Hunters event, it was, just to give a brief overview, it's people that believe that the living armor that Exo-Manowar, that Arik wears, is actually, part of a almost like a technological race that is in a way trying to take over, right, by planting seeds of itself throughout the galaxy, and left unchecked would eventually kind of exterminate organic life. And so you've got these Armor Hunters, and they're the antagonists, and I use that word antagonist rather than bad guys or villains, because in a way that in their mind they're the heroes, right? In their mind,
right,
they're trying to do what's right. And when you read the story, the way it's presented by Rob, it's like you do understand why they're doing what they're doing, and you do kind of sympathize with them. Again, it's telling those kind of stories where it's not necessarily good guy versus bad guy, it's just different point of views. That's where you start seeing, or where you start having stories that make you think, right? And they are interesting because of that, because you can see the point of Arik, you can see the point of the Armor Hunters. You kind of tend to agree with both, and it becomes compelling because you don't know, even you yourself reading it, which side you would be on put in that situation. And you end up caring about everybody, good guy, quote unquote, and bad guy also, quote unquote. So, I don't know if that is why that idea of caring about the characters is why, Venditti's Flash run was not well received. It's probably of his DC work, the run that's talked about the least and that I hear the least about. And when people do talk about it, they talk about how it just didn't work. And maybe for Rob, it was just a misunderstanding of how strongly people identified with Barry Allen as kind of a beacon of hope in the DC universe and a very positive person. I think Rob wanted to explore some of the ideas that were in the Manipole Buccellato run and take them to the logical next step. But that involved a lot of self-reflection for Barry and a lot of kind of angst almost. And when you think of Barry Allen, angst is almost the diametrically opposed concept of the character. So I think when I hear people talk about it and say they don't like it, I think that's kind of why. This goes to Cullen Bunn on Hawkman as well. Well written, but it just wasn't very well received because longtime fans of the character just said, no, this is not why I pick up an Aquaman title, to see this kind of story. And so I think a lot of people that were reading Flash were like, I don't pick up Flash to read about Barry Allen to see him kind of filled with self-doubt and wonder why he's doing what he's doing and this and that. So it's interesting. I actually love the run. It's got one of my favorite art teams of all time with Brett Booth and Norm Ratman and Andrew Dahlhaus, and Robert Venditti writing along with his co-writer on the series, Van Jensen, whose work I enjoy as well. So I thought it was good. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the future Barry Allen story where he comes back with this blue costume that looked super cool. I thought it was great. And I understand better now. At the time, I didn't understand why anybody wouldn't like it. I thought it was so good. But having talked to a lot more people since then and looking back on it, I can kind of understand it. Have either of you read any of that Flash stuff? Let's talk to you first, Tim.
That was towards the end of the New 52 proper, right?
It was kind of, I think he took over right around issue 21 or 22, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it started with the New 52 Flash, but like so many of the New 52 titles, as we mentioned earlier in this podcast, you just couldn't keep up with all 52. So I had jettisoned Flash pretty early with the creative shifts that they had with the book. And so, no, I had not gotten around to reading it. But at this point, I'm imagining there is a trade that I could probably track down pretty easy.
Several. What about you, Tim? Have you read any of Venditti's Flash at all?
No, I missed the Flash series. Living on the other side of the planet, I'm pretty limited on, you know, what's available for me to get my hands on. So, and I didn't really feel, you know, if I hear a lot of good stuff about, you know, a series, you know, it'd get my interest up and I'll go take it out. But I didn't hear too much about the Flash series, to be honest.
Yeah.
That's, so I didn't get that far.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And actually, now that I'm looking at my notes, I think it was issue 30 that Venditti started on the Flash, and he went to 49. And then Green Lantern, we've already mentioned. I just want to talk about it real briefly again. So he took over from Geoff Johns with the New 52 Green Lantern's title. He took over with 21 and went from 21 to 52. And then Green Lantern started over with the Rebirth issue. So there was a Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps is what they changed the title to. There was a Rebirth one-shot, which was amazing. And it sums up Robert Venditti's Green Lantern run for me so well, because it was the thing I loved about what he was doing with Green Lantern and has done throughout his entire run. After that one-shot on the twice-monthly Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, which I think issue 43 just came out. So good long run on the book. But to my point about that one-shot and the thing that I love about Venditti's run, here's a character that's been around for decades, right? And you would think, in a way, all the stories have been told. And sometimes that happens with characters like Batman or Superman. A new writer comes on, we get their take. But really, they're telling a story that's already been told before. I mean, some of these characters have had thousands and thousands of stories told already. What Robert Venditti's been able to do is he's been able to be very additive to the Green Lantern mythos. He's gone back in the Green Lantern history and the history of Hal Jordan and pulled concepts from different things in the past and turned them on their head. Or he's done things that are completely new, like what he has Hal Jordan do in the Rebirth one-shot, which, again, is just, it's such a great scene. And it makes complete sense that Hal Jordan would be able to do that. You're like, why didn't somebody think of this before? So for me, again, it's a legendary run of Green Lantern, and I think it's going to stand the test of time. So probably Robert Venditti's most well-known and well-received work to date is probably his run on Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. And for me, as a friend of Rob, I'm so happy for him because he did get so much flack early on for taking over for Geoff Johns. And, you know, Geoff Johns fan didn't like what Venditti was doing and everything. And I respected it. I thought it was good. First of all, it stood on its own merits. But I also respected the fact that Rob, as I said before, was following in you know, the footsteps of Geoff Johns and was going to have a tough time with that. Plus, he was trying some new stuff, right? He was
right.
Like, here's a character that's been around forever. Let's shake things up a bit. And so, yeah, if there's any, like, if somebody were to come to me and say, okay, I'm a big Hawkman fan, I'm going to read Robert Venditti's run, I haven't read anything by him, what do you suggest? Really, I'd suggest all these, but if I have to just pick one, I'm going to point them to the Green Lantern stuff. Just because it's so good, and also because he's a favorite character of mine. So definitely encourage you to check that out. Mm. Anything you want to add to that about Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps or Venditti's run, Doug?
it's definitely it's almost a shame that the end is in sight for Rob.
Agree.
Because right now, what he's doing with the Dark Stars is it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
You know, I'm struggling for a better word than fun, but that's exactly where I'm going with it. To your point, Jace, he's being additive. He's not retconning or throwing things out. He's digging a little deeper and putting a little bit more into it than, you know, just the same old, or just, hey, let's check out the Indigo Core again, or, you know, whatever the case may be. He's taken Hal out of the context of Earth and made it more what a lot of fans have wanted. And the problem with the Green Lantern concept is you're going to get fans who are on either side of that fence. They want Hal as the Green Lantern of Earth on Earth, defending Earth. Then they also want him out in space being space cop. And I think Robert's done a great job of making Hal a compelling character with exciting stories.
Yeah, and knowing Rob, he would also want us to mention he's had some amazing artists to help him out on the run. Rafa Sandoval, Robson Rocha, V. Ken Marion, Ethan Van Sciver. So I want to make sure to give those guys a shout out as well. The other title that Rob's writing for DC right now, and I believe this will continue with him writing, with him launching the Hawkman series rather, and I know he has some other projects on the horizon as well, but I wanted to mention Damage. I think it's only had 4 issues coming out, and to tie it back to Hawkman, Tony Daniel was his collaborative partner for the first 3 issues. So really, really great art. Interesting concept. It's a lot of people would say it's just a ripoff of The Incredible Hulk. To that, I would say there are certainly similarities. It's the story of a former Army soldier, Ethan Embry, I believe. Ethan Avery is his name. And he basically turns into this massive, destructive enemy or engine of war, if you will, but only for an hour at a time. And the creature he turns into is called Damage. And he's very much his own character, right? When Ethan Avery becomes Damage, the Ethan Avery persona is still there and is able to communicate with Damage, and vice versa. So you can almost think of it kind of like the classic Firestorm with Ronnie Raymond and Professor Stein. They seem like they're the same physical being, but they're clearly separate. And it's not like the Hulk where, you know, Bruce Banner becomes the Hulk and he thinks differently, but he's still Bruce Banner in a way. And, you know, we've seen plenty of times over the years where writers have gone in and said, oh, look, Bruce Banner can now become the Hulk and maintain his Bruce Banner intelligence. You know, so it's one mind, basically, one persona. This is very different, and we haven't learned exactly how it works yet, but it's been a lot of fun. Rob's really grown as a writer, I feel like, over the past 5 years, and he always manages to get in some really funny one-liners and Damage that have me laughing out loud. So, again, if you're curious about Rob's work, I wanted to point that out because it is so early. I think, as I said, only 4 issues have come out, so it's something you can jump on to check out his work and catch up relatively quickly. So, have either of you had a chance to check out Damage at all?
I've been reading it. What are they on, issue 4 right now?
Right. Yep.
But reading the Damage, yeah, I saw the the similarities to the Hulk, but at this point, really, you know, what character doesn't resemble something else anymore? Right. So that doesn't bother me that much. The one thing I thought reading other Venditti stories and Damage is that Venditti is really good at writing the supporting cast, their conversations. Just like Jace just said, you know, sometimes you kind of just bust out laughing at one of the, you know, something somebody said, or he's really good at drawing strong woman characters, female characters. And I've been enjoying the Damage series, actually. And it'd be kind of fun if if Damage series is continuing for a while, that Hawkman shows up in it one of these days. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that would be an epic battle. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
What about you, Doug?
That's one of the things. Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask if you had a chance to check out Damage yet.
I've been flipping through it, and I'll admit I'm trade-waiting that one.
Got it. Fair enough. Nothing wrong with that.
But that's something that Rob's certainly been doing with the series, is placing it very firmly in the DCU. I mean, on the cover, you've got a Wonder Woman appearance. You've got a Swamp Thing appearance on an upcoming issue.
Yeah.
So it's not, I don't think it's too far afield to maybe expect a Hawkman appearance.
Yeah, I would definitely expect that for sure. So, all right. Well, we're not going to keep you listeners any longer. I think that we have done a great job of bringing everybody up to speed and familiarizing you all with Hawkman. I hope you all check out the book from everything I've heard from Rob. He's really excited about it, and we just have to hope that it's well received. And so you can do your part. You can go out there and pick it up and tell your friends about it, and we can get that definitive run of Hawkman and finally solve a problem like a Hawkman. That'd be the ideal. So once again, I want to thank everyone for joining us. Remember, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. While you're there, be sure and check out all the other coverage on pop culture and movies and TV shows. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three places are great spots to find out when we release new episodes, as well as all our convention coverage. I want to thank Tim for joining me once again. I will put the links to both the Hawkworld website and the Hawkworld Twitter in the show notes if you want to follow. It's a great resource to go and check out and learn about Hawkman. Likewise, I want to thank Doug for joining. I will put a link to the Hawkman Companion that's available from the Tomorrow's website. Is that right, Doug?
Correct.
And do you have a Twitter as well?
Yes, I do. It's first initial, last name.
Great. So that'll be
that's the ZAWISCA.
Yeah, that'll be in the show notes as well. So thank you.
Hey, gentlemen. Jace, can I add a word?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Tim.
I just want to say, if you're a Hawkman fan, you know, you really want to know about Hawkman, go pick up Hawkman Companion that Doug wrote. It's, what was it, 2008 that you wrote the book, Doug?
2008 is when it was published, sir.
Yeah, it was published. But yeah. this book is a must-have for Hawk fans, and you can learn so much about the character. It's a great, great book. I wore out my first copy. I had to buy a second. So if you have an extra – how much does it cost? 15 bucks?
Well, it depends on where you get it from, exactly.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, yeah, if you got a few extra dollars, go pick up Hawkman Companion, because it is fantastic.
Thanks, Tim.
All right. So thank you for joining me, gentlemen. It's been a blast. I've learned a lot about Hawkman. I hope all you listeners have too. So
I think we've been able to confuse everybody even more now. So
Great. Well, thanks for joining, guys. And listeners,
thanks, Jace.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
We'll talk to you guys next time.